Welcome to iHeartRadio Communities, a public affairs special focusing on the biggest issues impacting you this week. Here's Ryan Gorman.
Thanks for joining us here on iHeartRadio Communities. I'm Ryan Gorman, and we have some really important conversations lined up for you in a moment. I'm going to check in with the doctor who's responsible for the creation of binational public health programs on both sides of the border to talk about how Hispanic communities across the country are dealing with the pandemic. Then I'll talk to Reverend Mark L. Hutchins, founder, chairman, and CEO of Movement Forward, Inc., and lead organizer of the National Faith in Blue Weekend. Also joining me will be New York City Police Commissioner Dermot Shea to talk about ways to bring law enforcement and communities together to solve problems. First, to get things started, I'm joined by Dr. Elon Shapiro, a pediatrician and medical director of health education and wellness for AltaMed. In light of this month being Hispanic Heritage Month, he's here to talk about health and health care within Hispanic communities across America. Dr. Shapiro, thanks so much for joining us. And if you can, let's begin with a broad overview of the state of health, wellness, and health care in our Hispanic communities.
Right now, it has been a very difficult time for everybody. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be talking with you. And, you know, we have seen with the Hispanic community something that it's different. In the past 2 years, a lot of the death toll, the impact of the pandemic has been very, very, very strong against, you know, communities of color, especially the Hispanic community. And a lot of people go like, well, why is that? Why are you having that? Why are you having issues with that? Is it the virus? Is it something that has been there cooking for a while? What's happening? In reality, it's decades of issues with social determinants of health and equity. When you combine problems with depression, anxiety, problems with social justice, environmental justice, living aside of a highway, having more asthma, having more obesity, all of those effects start compounding. And if you add the issues of not having accessible sources of nutritional food, having other areas that are not green pastures, and to actually have a safe place to, for the kids to run, you have multiple things there that, oh, you know the result. You had a pandemic, you had all these problems, and you have a higher complication rate, higher death toll, and most importantly, higher issues with testing, higher issues of getting access for a vaccine, and all so forth. And right now, we know that at the moment that we bring all that together, we need to start planning right now with, you know, of course, solve the problem that we have at hand, but most importantly, try to start conversations for the future.
Putting COVID-19 and the pandemic aside for just a moment, prior to all of that, what were some of the top health issues facing Hispanic communities?
Part of the issue that we have is a lot of mental health. It will be hard to say which one is the number one, but mental health is one of the top ones that we have. Depression, anxiety, it's a reality. And a lot of the between the Hispanic community, when you need access to mental health, it's something that, you know, it's not culturally on as part of the normal processes that we have. We're talking about feelings. We're having, you know, like a friend to share something. That those are the things that it's not part of the day-to-day thing. The other issues that we're having is, you know, a lot of problems with weight that are connected with obesity, they are connected with diabetes, and they are connected with, you know, kidney problems and all the issues that we have as a package with them. And I think that the third one is very important also. We need to talk about addictions. When we have a lot of the, you know, we have opioids, we have alcohol, we have all the things that are happening right now, and especially, you know, with young generations. And a lot of the things start with, you know, vaping. They start with nicotine-related, introduction of this type of things. And it becomes like a tradition. And that's where we want to need to create better future for our kids, bringing those, barriers against this type of situations.
for Hispanic Heritage Month. I'm joined right now by Dr. Elon Shapiro, a pediatrician and medical director of health education and wellness for Ultimed. He's responsible for the creation of binational public health programs on both sides of the border. And Dr. Shapiro, now tell us about the effect COVID-19 has had on Hispanic communities.
We started with the left foot a couple of months back, almost 18 months. Everybody was asked to stay home. And a lot of the Hispanic community members, you know, they stayed 1 to 3 days, but being essential workers, they needed to go out and be exposed and be part of that movement, that woman thing, that our community is working. And I'm telling from food pickers to fruit pickers to actually meat packers, you know, nurses, doctors, you know, and they needed to go out there. And they need to do public transportation. And of course, you know, not knowing what we know right now and the lack of PPEs, there was a lot of exposure for the Hispanic communities. Plus, understanding that we already carried more of the significant problems for complications like diabetes, obesity, hypertension, the rates of hospitalizations and use of ICU were very high. The same thing happened, you know, following a lot of months. And the thing that started kind of changing when we started with the testing, and we said, well, yes, we need to test people. We need to make sure to understand what's happening with the community. But again, because of the zip codes, the infrastructure, and a lot of the lag between sending the test and actually receiving it in the community, there was a lag between what was happening as public health officials and what was actually needed in our community. Then there was a lot of efforts there that, you know, we were lagging at the beginning. And afterwards, the you know, a lot of the information was in English, and we needed to translate it to Spanish, and it was translated. And some of the times there were issues with, you know, with the translation, because it was not culturally appropriate. It was kind of, you go to Google, you translate it, and you hope for the best. And sometimes that you a lot of information gets lost in translation. And the second part was making sure that it was accessible. You know, it's awesome that it's an internet, but what if they do not have access to internet?
Right.
They do not have a smartphone. How can we get a lot of those individuals in the community safe passage to information? Then we needed to figure out how to do that part. And the vaccines came out, and we had a lot of information about how to share them and protect our communities. And of course, you know, as we know each other, we had a lot of issues with misinformation and disinformation. And part of it was actually catered to the Hispanic community. And part of it was the interaction between the void of lack of information. Then if there's a void and you need to fill it with space, you know, a lot of creepy stuff actually started like coming up with it.
For Hispanic Heritage Month, I'm joined right now by Dr. Elon Shapiro, pediatrician and medical director of health education and wellness for Ultimed. One final question for you. What are you seeing when it comes to vaccination rates within Hispanic communities? And what's your message for both those who are unvaccinated and for parents who will soon be making decisions about whether or not to get their children vaccinated as vaccines for younger age groups become approved and available?
The first thing and most important thing is I'm going to start with the kids. As a pediatrician and as a father, taking my vaccine it was very important for me. And the way that I approach it and the way that I share it with my patients and families is that it's a very personal thing, and you need to put, you know, feeling aside, you know, it's okay to have fear, but, you know, put it aside for a moment and figure out what are your odds and numbers. It was clear for me as a physician, as part of the community, living where I live, you know, that the exposure rates were high, and they continue to be high in most of the U.S. And the only way that I saw to protect myself was actually with the vaccine to reduce the possibilities of having that contact with COVID-19. And the way that I saw it was that, you know, the same way that I go in a car and I wear my seatbelt, and I start driving, and I'm not thinking about an accident, but if an accident happened, you know, I will be at least safe. I will have some type of neck pain in my shoulder, but I have the seatbelt, and I have more probabilities of coming back to my family. The same way that I saw the vaccine. if I didn't use that vaccine, you know, and I came out and had an accident, I could fracture my face, fly over from, you know, the window, and there could be a bad accident. And the same thing happens with the vaccine. I use it as my seatbelt. That way, whenever I am with patients on the community or doing any interactions with other people, I at least acknowledge that I continue to be safe. I follow all the rules and regulations that I need to follow. But, you know, in case of that accident, I will be moving forward. And for my kids, I'm doing the same process. I'm analyzing what would be better for them. To have the vaccine or to have a full force effect of the COVID-19 in front of them. And at the beginning, there were many people that were saying that kids, that, you know, COVID-19 was like just like a cold for them. And the reality has changed and shifted a lot. After 4th of July, with COVID-19, the Delta variant, and having more contact with more people, we're seeing that kids are getting sick. To the point that in the past month, practically more than 1 million kids, we had new diagnosis of almost 1 million kids. And that's a lot of kids. And from the total of 5.5 in the entire epidemic and pandemic, then it's a huge number. It's almost 1/4 of all the cases in less than 6 weeks. Then we have a lot of things to learn right now. We're seeing, thank God, the mortality rate, and that's completely true. The mortality rate in kids is way lower than adults, but still kids are dying from it. And we're seeing a lot of, almost a tenfold, a certain peak of hospitalizations of kids because of COVID-19, things that we never saw before. Then this is changing. And for my kids, going back to school in person, I think that, you know, it's better to be protected with a vaccine than having the full force effect of COVID-19 in front of them.
Dr. Ilan Shapiro, pediatrician, who's currently serving as Ultimate's Medical Director of Health Education and Wellness. He's also someone who's created binational public health programs to improve the health of Hispanic communities on both sides of the border. He's here with us for Hispanic Heritage Month. Dr. Shapiro, thank you so much for your time and insight. We really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, and that's why we now need to start vaccinating our communities against fear with a dose of truth.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Dr. Shapiro. Finally, I'm joined now by Reverend Markel Hutchins, founder, chairman, and CEO of Movement Forward, Inc., and lead organizer of the National Faith in Blue Weekend. Also joining me is New York City Police Commissioner Dermot Shea to discuss ways to bring law enforcement and communities together to solve problems. First of all, I want to thank both of you for taking the time out to have this conversation. Reverend, let me start with you. Tell us about Faith in Blue Weekend.
So the community and law enforcement need each other more now than at any other period in American history. What we are doing with Faith in Blue Weekend is not based upon any religion. It's not a religious or sectarian effort. We simply recognize that faith-based organizations have an enormous capacity to be goodwill ambassadors, to build bridges between law enforcement and the communities that officers protect and serve. Faith-based organizations constitute the largest body of volunteers of any kind in our country, and they should be bridge builders and liaisons between the community at large and law enforcement. National Faith in Blue Weekend is the largest and most collaborative police community engagement project in history. And so while it is faith-based, it is not religious. These houses of worship and faith-based organizations simply have influence, they have an audience, and they have a wide network to be able to bridge gaps between law enforcement and the communities.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but these are parts of the community that have worked together for a long time now. There's a history between faith-based organizations and law enforcement coming together, right?
What we're doing is we're awakening the voice of the silent majority of the American people. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. used to talk about the difference in the vocal minority and the silent majority. what we have seen over the last several years is a demonization and bastardization of law enforcement. Too much tensions, too many dissensions, and that is the minority of the American people. The truth of the matter is more than 90% of white Americans, more than 80% of Hispanic and African Americans want the same amount or more law enforcement, not defunding the police, not decreasing police presence. The communities that need good law enforcement the most are the ones that suffer from rhetoric like defunding the police and the kinds of rioting and violence that we've seen over the last several years. We are awakening the voice through National Faith and Blue Weekend of the majority of the American people who want the same or more law enforcement. As we've seen the tensions between police and communities escalate, we've seen crime and violence, particularly violent crime, rise across this country. So our work around National Faith and Blue Weekend to bridge these divides is twofold. It's to increase the American people's understanding of law enforcement and vice versa, but it is also to engage the American people with law enforcement to reduce violent crime that is escalating. We need one another, and I think Faith and Blue Weekend is an awesome opportunity for us to focus on our commonalities and not our differences.
Commissioner, let me bring you in here for a moment, because there's a pretty sizable portion of law enforcement who are part of these faith-based organizations anyway when they're not on the job. And that has to be a huge and positive component to all of this.
It absolutely is. And as I listened to the reverend speak, I think he hit the nail on the head in so many different ways. I was at a church yesterday in Brooklyn, and it was a mass to commemorate the Feast of St. Michael, the patron saint of police officers. And as I listened to the father, the priest, speaking, what was going through my head was he talked about service, he talked about caring for others. And when you think about the two, the clergy and the police, there is so much in common in what we do. I could tell you that the shared values really are what draw us together. And I would also say that, Reverend Hutchins talked about some of the struggles that we're going through these days, and those are real as well. But I think there's an incredible opportunity for us, the clergy and law enforcement across this country, to really bridge that gap and for the law enforcement leaders to use the clergy, because I would argue that no one has a better finger on the pulse of a community than the clergy. They're looked at. They're revered by the members of the community. And for us to kind of tap into that and to use them to tell our story, I think is really an opportunity.
I'm joined right now by Reverend Mark L. Hutchins, founder, chairman, and CEO of Movement Forward, Inc., and lead organizer of the National Faith and Blue Weekend, and New York City Police Commissioner Dermot Shea. We're talking about ways to bring law enforcement and communities together to solve problems. Reverend, would you say one of the goals of this event is to address some of the misconceptions each group, these different communities and law enforcement potentially have about each other?
That's one of the goals and objectives, but it's not so much setting the record straight. It's really focusing and refocusing our nation on the commonalities that we have. I think most people recognize that the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many other tragedies that have divided us must be addressed. We cannot overlook some of these tragedies, but the answers to the questions around how to prevent officer-involved tragedies as well as how to prevent attacks on law enforcement professionals lie in the local communities. There's a lot of conversation nationally about the need for police reform, and there are some reforms that are necessary. We have to look at innovating the law enforcement profession, but the greatest need for reform is relational reformation, how law enforcement officers and local residents relate to one another as humans. Somewhere along the way over the last several years, we've lost the ability to see each other and our humanity in one another. That's what we're restoring with Faith in Blue Weekend. Some things we can train in the academy, but humanizing the law enforcement professionals for members of the public and humanizing local residents for law enforcement professionals is not something that can happen in the academy. That has to happen through human engagement, through human interaction. There was a time in law enforcement where law enforcement professionals got out of their cars. Police officers knew people in the community. And with the advent of technology, those relationships have begun to diminish. If we're going to see a reduction in the number of police-involved tragedies, if we're going to see a reduction in the number of attacks on officers and officer suicides and those kinds of things, we have to get back to the humanity. And those things cannot be taught in the academy. They can only happen through activities and outreach like we're seeing across the country over the course of Faith in Blue Weekend.
And Commissioner, do you have something to add to that?
You know, it's not about setting the record straight. I think there's a lot of mistakes that are always made. I mean, I think it's about seeing each other. And we are, let's remember, we are all humans. And the same police officers that put on a gun belt and go patrol the neighborhood are the very same police officers that bring their family to services on the weekend to pray. The more that we just come together, and I think that's where, you know, police and clergy together is an incredible facilitator there. But the more we come together and hear each other and talk about what's going on in our communities, they are our communities, and how do we work with each other and other nonprofit organizations and the people that live in the communities and businesses and find common areas that we can all agree on. It's certainly been probably one of the most polarizing times in this country's history the last 8 to 10 years. And it's, you know, some people thrive on it and want it to continue. That's that minority, I would say. But most of us want to get on with our lives and lead productive lives and have a successful life and raise children and bring them to church and see them grow old and see grandchildren. How do we get to the point where we find the common bonds that bind us all together and just move forward, serving the community, making the community safer for all, on the police side, doing it the right way? I mean, I think that that's a big piece of what we're trying to do here.
You know, Reverend, social media has been in the spotlight a lot over the past week, especially how it can really highlight anger and division. And we see that a lot in some of these interactions between the community and law enforcement when they go viral, this immediate angry response, sometimes before all the facts are even in, that can't be helping the problem.
Well, that's it. That is essential to why and central to why we created National Faith in Blue Weekend. I have been at the forefront of human and civil rights advocacy for the last 20 years. I have led marches and protests from one side of this country to the other, and I was mentored by those that worked very closely with Martin Luther King Jr., including his wife, Coretta Scott King, and John Lewis, and Jesse Jackson, and Andrew Young, and so many others. But at some point, we have got to shift our focus from the outrage of protesting to the inward work of actually building bridges, seeing the commonalities the commissioner talked about, seeing the humanity in one another. I think what we've seen over the last several years with a lot of the protests and the divisive rhetoric and rioting, et cetera, is understandable. People are passionate, but it's not curative. It's not fixing anything. And that's what our aspiration must be as long law enforcement professionals, as well as community residents and community leaders. We've actually got to fix the problems, and we don't do that by yelling and screaming at one another. As long as we have some Americans in one corner yelling, "Our lives matter," and a different group of Americans in a different corner yelling, "Our lives matter," there's very little good that we can achieve, but there is no limit to the good that we can achieve if we have the courage and capacity to sit together and reason together. But that has to happen in every community and in every corridor, which is why we encourage people in the community. There's still plenty of time to visit the website faithandblue.org, work with a faith-based or community organization and law enforcement to plan an event, and every person in this country can find an event happening in and around them. There's thousands of events happening in all 50 states. We want this to be a movement, again, there have been movements over the last several years that I believe have intentionally divided law enforcement and community, and we're building a movement to unite us together like never before with the help of our most respected institutions, as Commissioner said, these faith-based organizations.
I'm joined right now by Reverend Mark L. Hutchins, founder, chairman, and CEO of Movement Forward, Inc., and lead organizer of the upcoming National Faith and Blue Weekend, and New York City Police Commissioner Dermot Shea. So let's dive into Faith and Blue Weekend and these events happening all across the country in all 50 states. What can everyone expect if they attend one?
Well, I can tell you that the New York City Police Department, last year, Faith and Blue Weekend happened in its inaugural year. It was the first year that it ever happened. It went from being a concept in my head to a national event within a matter of 4 months. The New York City Police Department, our nation's largest local law enforcement agencies, did the most events of any agency in this country. There were 80 different events, 82 to be exact, across New York City. But there are things like peace and justice walks. There are things like Habitat for Humanity builds and blood drives that help to really serve the community, law enforcement and the faith community, reaching out to the community at large. There are things like, I mentioned, the peace and justice walks, which is really, really powerful. There's been so much marching with law enforcement and communities marching on each other. We saw some powerful events come up this year where law enforcement and communities will be marching together to reduce violence and to build these bridges. There are all sorts of events that are happening from coast to coast, which says to us the majority of the American people want solutions. People are tired of the fighting, they're tired of the anger, and they're most especially sick of the violence. We've got to figure out a pathway forward, and stuff, things like National Faith and Blue Weekend give us an opportunity to focus on moving forward.
Final question for you, and this one goes to both of you. Are you optimistic that these events can create real positive change?
Well, I'll start, and the answer is yes. There's certainly a lot of struggles and challenges that we see across the country still. I think it's important to acknowledge that. But I'm incredibly hopeful, and I'll tell you why. Because I interact with people of every denomination, of every faith, of every ethnicity across New York City every single week. And what they tell me is what the Reverend started out with, that they're incredibly supportive of the police. New Yorkers are very keen and very sharp, and they'll call us out when we do something wrong as well. But they're an optimistic people, and they want what we all want. They want a better life for their kids. They want to proceed in society and have a better life. And more we are hearing, what can we do to help? And this is, I think, an incredible opportunity. We plan on doing it across New York City to hold events, to use it as the hook, to pull people in and say, okay, now that we're here today marching, how can we do more going forward? Do you want to work with us on food drives? Do you want to work with us in mentoring kids across the community? Do you want to get involved with anti-violence and spread our message for us? Do you want to clean up parks? So the more that we are doing things together and getting involved and getting to know each other, I think it's exactly the road that we should be on.
I agree with the commissioner. I am extraordinarily hopeful. These have been some dark times. There continue to be an escalation in crime and violence. There's continued challenge and strain in some of the divisive rhetoric that we've seen is undermining public safety. So, and I happen to serve on the National Board of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund and Museum. We honor the fallen officers that give themselves in service to our country every single year and die in the line of service. There's an escalation of attacks on officers. Like never before, we're seeing officers leaving the profession and taking their own lives by suicide. But our darkest hours have always been just before the brink of a new dawning. I certainly believe that we have the courage, if we have the courage, we certainly have the capacity in this country to transform this darkness and make of it a marvelous light. I believe we will emerge, as the commissioner said, the last 8 or 10 years have been a especially straining in terms of the relationship between law enforcement and communities. But I believe going forward, we're going to see a dramatic shift and turn, and I truly believe that the faith community is an essential part of that. There's never been a movement for progressive or positive social change in this country, most especially the civil rights movement, that was not anchored in the faith space. The faith community has always been a pillar of hope and healing that moves our nation forward. We need every faith-based organization, every community group, every school to be that beacon of hope and justice for law enforcement and for local residents.
Reverend Mark L. Hutchins, founder, chairman, and CEO of Movement Forward, Inc., and lead organizer of the National Faith in Blue Weekend, and New York City Police Commissioner Dermot Shea with me to talk about this upcoming event and ways to bring law enforcement and communities together to solve problems. I want to thank you both so much for taking the time to have this conversation. We appreciate you coming on.
Great. Thank you.
All right. And that'll do it for this edition of iHeartRadio Communities. As we wrap things up, I want to offer a big thanks to all of our guests and, of course, to all of you for listening. I'm Ryan Gorman. We'll be back here same time, same place next weekend. Stay safe.